slowly rolling into it and off of corner number four. It's showtime at Skagit Speedway. First to qualify with 410 in, it is the Oklahoma Chiller, sponsored number 23, the reigning American Sprint Car Series National Champion, Wedge High Performance Cars, Bryant Paver Motorsports, Canyon Creek RV Park, and Victory Fuel Triple X on the 23 of Seth Bergman. It's showtime!
One car with the front of it that was junk, and another car with the back of it was junk. So I cut both of them in half, took the good part of one car and the good part of the other car, and welded them together.
The reason why I decided to move the Sean's number and use it was just because the memory of Sean was his V8. And, I just kind of lived for racing and racing with his number just to remember him by.
Racing, and next thing you know, she's on the flag stand running this, doing flag and all my quarterback. I'm like, where did you come from?
My experience, you got to have desire. It's a tough sport. Spend a lot of time away, and you definitely have to want it. You can't just say you want it. You got to want it. You got to have that desire that drives you through a lot of the tough times.
Well, welcome to episode number 4 of the On the Gas podcast presented by Skagit Speedway. I'm your host, Eric List, and our other co-host, Blake Anderson, not here this week. He is at Eldora Speedway for the King's Royal Weekend. So, Blake, hope you're doing well in Ohio. We'll see you back here next weekend where we'll have another fun guest leading into the Fred Brownfield 360 Nationals presented by Bob's Burgers and Brew. But this past weekend, it was Doyle Guffey's Rally Auto Sales Hall of Fame night at Skagit Speedway. 410s, midgets, and sportsman sprint cars. 15 410s in the house, 21 sportsman sprint cars, and 19 CGE garage midgets all checked in for a night of racing here at Skagit Speedway. Starting in the 410 division, Colton Heath got the win. Seth Bergman, Jesse Schlotfeldt, Eric Fisher, Justin Youngquist, your top five. However, despite Heath getting the win, Colin Mackey dominated, led 28 of the 30 total laps until he ran out of fuel, and that forced him to have to go to the back. Mackey dominated those 28 laps he led, and it was a caution that forced a late race restart, and that late race restart is where Mackey stumbled and ended up running out of fuel. A caution came out for that. A open red and fuel stop happened at that time. Mackey had pulled into the infield. He did refuel and tag the back of the field. And he worked his way back up to finishing in the 11th position. But Mackey started second initially, beat Trace Starks off the start, and really ran away with the race. Controlled the entire thing, held off charges from Eric Fisher, from Trace Starks. Got through lap traffic really well. Unfortunately, just a fuel issue and really lack thereof for Colin Mackey that turned the night against him. Colton Heath, though, picks up his first win this year in the 410. He started fifth and methodically just kind of picked his way through the field really nicely. Again, kind of similar to Seth Bergman, who started eighth and found his way back to second as well. Jesse Schlotfeldt spun early and worked his way back to third. Quick look at the 410 point standing here at Skagit Speedway. Trey Stark still leads Jason Solwald in second. Jesse Schlotfeldt into the third spot. Solwald is 37 points back. Jesse is 137 points back. Justin Youngquist and Robbie Price make out the top five there. In the Sportsman Sprint Car division, Jaden Whitney drove to his second career win at Skagit Speedway, leading all 25 laps of the main event. Really, relatively unchallenged. Dana Glenn raced from 6th to 2nd, and Steven Hendrickson charged up for a nice 3rd place finish as well. Justin Jacobson and Peyton Drake round out that top 5. A lot of speed from Dana Glenn was shown on Saturday. In his heat race in the main event, he was hanging with Jaden Whitney from time to time, just couldn't really seem to get there, and that's kind of why, Whitney was unchallenged. But there was a lot of speed from Dana Glenn that, if Jane Whitney was to make a mistake, Dana Glenn would have pounced. But Whitney drove a really smart race, picks up his second win of the year, and looked really good doing. He started on the pole ended up finishing that way as well. We'll take a look at the Sports Sprint Car points here at Skagit Speedway. Jaden Whitney takes over the points lead back from Justin Jacobson, who falls back to second. Now they're tied, so technically I guess first and second at 756 points, so a tie for first place between Jaden Whitney and Justin Jacobson. Both have two wins on the year. Jaden Whitney has six top five, six top tens, and seven features, so only one race where Whitney has not finished inside the top five or top ten. Justin Jacobson, two wins, five top fives, six top tens, and seven featured race. Steven Hendrickson sits in the third position. He's 713 points total, 43 points back. Macy Longston is in fourth, and Kira Zylstra rounds out the top five in Sportsman Sprint Car points here at Sky Speedway. The CGE Garage Midgets were also here and raced, and a great night it was for none other than Shane Smith. Started second, finished first, and a really interesting Skagit Speedway for the Midgets. Saw them able to really run a half a groove to almost a full car length off the bottom. They were running the top. They were putting their right rears kind of on a pseudo cushion that was there and making a lot of ground. All the three we talked to on the podium, being Smith, Peck, and Jeff Westergaard, all just commented on how fun the track was and how good of a race, you know, they felt like it was. Shane Smith picked up the win. Came from outside the front row. Alex Peck really was there the entire time. And Jeff Westergaard, again, in third, but Peck couldn't get by. Westergaard threatening, but really, again, couldn't do a whole heck of a lot with that one. But Shane Smith picks up his second win of the year in the CGE Garage Midgets, which continues to help his points lead. He was a points leader coming into the night and continues to be the points leader. He's extended that up to 22 points over Ryan Orchard, who sits in second, and Nick Evans sits in third. Chad Kincaid and Brad Pritchard, 4 and 5. Well, no racing at Skagit Speedway this weekend. We are off for Clay Cup up at Deming Speedway, so Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. Go support the micro track up north. Paul Lemley, one of our recent inductees into the Skagit Speedway Hall of Fame, along with his brother Dave and Bill Lemley, owns Deming Speedway. So their big micro sprint car race, one of the big micro sprint car races really in the nation, up at Deming Speedway, pays $10,000 to win on Saturday night. A lot of fun. So go up there and support Deming Speedway. We'll be back in the house and back racing at Skagit Speedway, though, on the 25th and 26th for the Fred Brownfield 360 Nationals presented by Bob's Burger and Brew, along with the Hornet Nationals presented by K-Pro Auto. But we'll talk more about that at the end of the show. With that, let's get in to today's guest. We're joined by Seth Bergman. All right, so joined on the On the Gas podcast now by Seth Bergman. Thanks for taking some time. You're up here at Skagit Speedway for about a month, getting ready for the Summer Nationals, or the more appropriately titled Fred Brownfield 360 Nationals presented by Bob's Burger and Brew. How's July been like for you coming back to Skagit Speedway?
It's been good. I got here at the beginning of the month, and we ran the 360 weekly show, the fireworks show. That was interesting. We broke in hot laps, didn't get to qualify, so it put us behind all night. And then we ended up getting hard charger going 14-4. So, you know, for where we started to end it, that was good. So did that. Then following weekend, which was this last weekend, we ran the 410, and I've been out of a 410 for a long time. You know, I have less than 20 starts probably in my entire career in a 410. So it's kind of something we're looking into, feeling out a little bit. So we ran that for the first time. It's been in the works for quite a few months now, getting that ready. So first time out with that, there were some things we needed to learn and some things that happened early in the night that we kind of self-inflicted that we ended up getting through and working through. But by the end of the night, we kind of had worked some of the kinks out. Didn't qualify well again, but like I said, some self-inflicted things there. But by the end of the night, I started eighth, and we ended up getting hard charger again, and then we ended up second with a shot to win. I felt like if things play out just maybe a little different, there were some restarts and stuff late. So that was good. That was a success for us. I didn't really know what to expect, but it was good. So we did that. And yeah, long story short, the month's been, there's been some downtime, but some good racing too. So it's been good.
Yeah, you mentioned there's been a little bit of downtime. You played in the Clay Cup golf tournament yesterday with John Hager. You guys won. He said your putting was phenomenal. What do you credit with that?
I don't know. I've golfed quite a bit, but haven't golfed a lot lately. So it was definitely good to be on a four-man scramble because some of my shots weren't pretty. But for whatever reason, the putter was hot. And that's what they say. You drive for show and putt for dough. So it was a lot of fun, though. That's really about the only trophy I've won here lately. So, you know, it was a good time, and we got a little bit of hardware, and hopefully in some weird way that'll translate into some more trophies here soon.
Well, an off weekend this weekend before we get into the 360 Nationals, what are you kind of expecting for those two nights of racing?
Expecting as far as a team standpoint or an event standpoint, or what do you mean?
A little of both. First, what do you kind of expect as your team? What would be a successful weekend in your mind?
To win. That's it, just winning. I don't look at that race and that event in any other way than to win. So it's you know, I still do this because I love to compete, but I still do this because I want to win. Mm-hmm. So, and especially with the 360 stuff, I mean, we're off of the toughest 360 series in the world. You know, last year we won the national championship and just go all over and race for money. And that's kind of what our team's been catered to. So especially, you know, an event with a 360 engine in, there's nothing short of just I expect to come here and win and be competitive. I know there's going to be a lot of good cars and good teams, but we're one of them. We have a great team and been a part of a lot of 360 racing. So we've been a little bit off this year. It hasn't been the season, you know, for our standards. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been quite what we would expect, but we're working through it. And here lately, I feel like we've been learning some things and getting better. And it's tough when you're not winning, your confidence gets down. And so we've kind of been going through that rut, but we, you know, a win here would definitely help kind of turn our season around. And an event like that and a pay like that, it would be nice. It would be good for our team and, you know, give us a little bit of momentum, maybe carry through the rest of the year.
So you brought it up, the toughest, 360 probably touring ASCS. You won it back in 2024. You've been on the road, though, I would say, since what? I know you started 2009, came back to Grays in 2010, and then went back on the road after that, right? And it's been pretty much on the road with ASCS from that time on?
Yeah, so 2009, I mean, I raced around here at Skagit before that, but and Deming. I was at Deming Speedway as well when I was younger, but 2009 was our first year we went on the road. We raced in 2009, came back in 2010, and raced. We actually ran a little bit of Skagit, I think. Not much that year. We ran Grays Harbor mostly. Won a track championship there in 2010. And then from then on out, from 2011 to 2018, we were full-time with the national tour. Yeah. And then like 2019 to basically last year, I just traveled around, made our own schedule. And then last year, we committed full-time again. And then, you know, we won a championship. And then this year, our plan originally was to go and do it again. And I don't know, it's just kind of the way things were working out. We just decided to go in a different direction. So, you know, we find ourselves out here.
Fair enough. And you had talked, you know, one of your goals was to win that national championship when I was kind of doing some background. What did it feel like to finally accomplish that in 2024? 7 wins, I think the most top fives at 25 or something of anyone on the tour.
It was good. It was just something me and my family, you know, and our team had worked at for a long period of time. So when you can stay committed to something like that for a long period of time and then finally have it pay off, you know, people could probably imagine what that would feel like. It was when you don't get something for so long and you work at it, it's tough and you go through a lot of tough times and it's a roller coaster. So to finally, you know, get a group of people together that really made it all possible for me to have everything we needed to do it and then put it all together and do it was just a long time, you know, a lot of years of sacrifice and work and staying committed finally paid off. And that was a big weight lifted off my shoulders for sure.
Yeah. How did you now, we'll step back really, and how did you get into racing? What was your start?
Family.
Yeah.
You know, my dad raced, my grandpa was involved with cars. Just a family deal, like a lot of these guys. You know, it's kind of, you don't really get into it unless you have a tie to it. So it was no different for me going to the racetrack as a kid, watching my dad race. And then, you know, I had got into it eventually and raced go-karts, just dirt flat track go-karts. I think originally I started on a a peewee, like 50 motorcycle flat track stuff, just you know, being a kid having fun. And
yeah.
Then that went to go-karts, and go-karts went to Deming Speedway.
Yep.
We raced 250, and then from there, you know, just kind of worked up the Northwest chain. It was Deming Speedway and a 250, and then here in a Sportsman Sprint, and then a 360, and then we dabbled just a little bit of 410 stuff. But, well, at that time, ASCS was really taking off with 360 stuff, and it mm-hmm. seemed like the money was good with it, and 410 was just like, if you weren't on the Outlaws, the weekly stuff and things like that was kind of going away around here. So we went 360 racing, and that's kind of, we put all our eggs in that basket, and we've been there for a long time since then. So I mean, just kind of, you know, led us down that path of 360 racing, and I think finally we kind of accomplished a goal that took us a really long time to do, probably longer than it should have, and mostly it's because of me. But now we're to a point where, you know, because I feel like we did that, we can have a little flexibility in our schedule right now and going forward.
You mentioned Deming Speedway. It's Clay Cup week this weekend. You won Clay Cup in 2004. I know that is a long time back, but what do you remember from winning it back in 2004?
This is cool. It was the first named kind of big race I won in my career. I was young. I was 15 probably. So it was just cool. It was just, I don't think back then I had any expectations of anything. We were just doing it, and I think it kind of caught all of us off guard. The 250th class I remember at the time was big, and it was definitely cool, and kind of reassured the fact that, you know, this is kind of what I wanted to do. So it's shortly after that is when we bought our first Sportsman sprint car, and I was old enough, turned 16, and we got into that. So it was a good time. Being young, racing close to home at Deming. And so now when I come back, and I have a lot of good memories there, and I'll probably go up this week and watch a little bit of the Clay Cup. And, you know, it's funny because I had talked to some of the younger kids that race up there now, and they don't even know that the 250 class existed. They laugh. They don't even know what it is. So I was like, well, that was kind of before 600s were even around. Yeah. So I don't feel old, but when you talk about things like that, and it's like 2004 when you start doing the math. It's like, man, I've been doing this for a long time. So, but I was thinking about it too. That'd be really cool. Cause the first year I won, the 360 Nationals, I've won the 360 Nationals here twice. The first year I won it was in 2014.
Okay, and so I was thinking, 10 years.
You know, I feel as competitive now as I've ever been with a good team. So it's like, man, if I could find a way to win it again for a third time, that'd be pretty cool to be competitive over that long of a period of time. And so that's kind of the goal currently right in front of my face is like we touched on earlier, is to come here and focus on winning a race.
What do you remember from those two times of winning the
excitement?
Yeah.
You know, that's why we do it. It's like I said, why I compete is I've had a lot of people ask me why I do, but just competition. I don't know. It's something in me that it's just, I love to compete and win. I mean, I don't, that's what it comes down
who
to.
Doesn't?
So Yeah, I think some guys are a little more intense about it than others. It kind of, you know, some guys say they want to, but for me, it shapes a lifestyle and a mindset. And, you know, running well is good, and it's good for the team. But winning is what it comes down to, and it's been frustrating lately. We haven't done a lot of it, so I've been working hard to get back to that standard and in winning ways for our team.
Any reason you feel it's been a struggle as of late? Anything you can kind of pinpoint, or is it
not
just
really? It's just kind of the way it goes sometimes. Yeah. I mean, we changed a lot in our program to try to get better after the end of last year. We were even, I feel like we were somewhat struggling during the championship chase. I don't feel like we were as good as we needed to be. And a lot of it's probably me, whether it's on the wrenches or getting frustrated as a driver. And, you know, it's just, I have been to a point now with our team for a long time to where I set the race cars up. I manage the team. I drive the race cars, the hauler, like you name it, I'm doing it. So it just, at times it becomes a lot. And I think the driver in me suffers a little bit at times because I'm just mentally exhausted. And then it's tough to put on a crew chief hat and then put on the driver's hat. Cause it seems like one way or the other, you're always disappointed with yourself, whether it's as a crew chief or a driver. So, there's no excuses. It's just challenging, and that's where we're at right now. So I don't know, just between a lot of changes going on, we've had a lot of different crew help over the years and inconsistencies. So when you're doing it, that stuff plays into it a lot. It's a very mental game, and it hasn't been for a lack of effort from our sponsors and partners, though. We have a really good team, and you know, we haven't won a lot here lately, but we won a lot last year and won a championship. And I feel like we've just been kind of going through a transition period. and just working on things, really. I just can't really accredit anything to why we haven't been. We've been so close so many times. You know, we went 14-4 here. Mm-hmm. You can see we've got speed. We ran second in our 410. We've ran second so many times this year. Been so close to winning, led a lot of laps. We just haven't broke through yet. And been around long enough now, that's just kind of the way it goes sometimes. Mm-hmm. And sure, it's super frustrating, and it's on my mind. So working hard to I guess, like they say, get that monkey off our back. And, you know, I'm used to seasons where we've won close to 20 races yeah. in and out and always winning. And it's been in a bit of a slump here lately. And, yeah, we're going to make sure we get out of it.
How do you mentally not let that get you down?
It's almost impossible. It's tough. You know, you start doubting and questioning. And for me, I just kind of fall back on work ethic and, you know, making sure I'm doing what we need to do and make sure our race cars are prepared. I know at the end of the day, if we give ourselves a good piece and our engines are running good and our cars are good, we'll win races. So just really putting in the work. And then for me, just trying to stay out of my own head, just focus on other things. And you know, you start dwelling on a lot, it can get to you. So mentally, you just got to stay in a positive place and keep working towards your goals and knowing that if you're working and making the right decisions and putting in all the right work that, you know, it'll turn around.
You kind of mentioned how your team is set with you really doing a lot of it. What are the dynamics like? Do you have a couple crew guys or is it a lot of just you and maybe one other guy?
So right now it's me and one other guy. When I come out here, I have a friend of mine, Alan, who's worked for me before that makes it nice. He's been at the track with us, so we have another hand at the track. And when I do come out here, we have some hands-on help in the pit area with cleaning the car and doing some of the simple tasks like that. But, you know, for the last year or so, we've had two guys. One of them left, so it's tough finding committed, good help when you're on the road full-time. But it's just me and one other guy full-time right now. So, yeah, it's a grind. It's a lot of work, especially on race days. And when you're racing a lot, there's a lot to do. So, that's kind of where we're at as far as help. We're looking, you know, trying to grow our team and our help and our schedule a little bit. So that's just the way it goes in sprint car racing. And that's just where we're at with it right now.
So in 2024, when you're out with ASCS, you spent some time with Wayne Johnson, correct? But then you won the championship, I believe, in your own car. Am I right with that?
Yeah. So we started the beginning of last year when Wayne had gotten injured. I got the call and I ended up driving for 2C at the beginning of the year and my stuff was ready to go. It was sitting in the shop, ready to go. I had it prepared. And when that had happened to Wayne, it was right before our season was about to start. So, I went to drive for them and things didn't work out and I ended up leaving. But all my stuff was ready to go back at the shop. So I just went back to the shop and we carried on.
So the points then just rolled over because it's the driver.
So I was able to keep my driver's points. Yeah. So, you know, with the national tour, there's driver's points and owner's points. Yeah. So as a driver, it doesn't matter what car you're in.
So when you're in your own stuff, what does your night look like when you're having to watch the track, set up the car compared to someone who's maybe driving for a crew and has more time to just kind of focus on driver type duties?
It's just a lot busier, you know. Yeah. You know, if you look at a well-structured team, there's a driver, a crew chief, a car chief, a tire guy, a cleaner. So for me, it's like me and one other guy a lot of times. Well, I have to be the crew chief. I have to be the driver. I got to be, you know, the car chief, making sure nothing's falling off of it. And then, of course, Jake, you know, he's with me, and he's sharing the workload as well on a lot of those tasks that people just don't see on race night. So for me, it's just a lot of work. It's not a lot of conversation. A lot of the times, like, people think I'm a dickhead or an asshole because the conversation is just not a lot, but it's really not the case at all. But for me, it's like I need to stay on track. I need to watch the track. I need to make sure our car's performing and things aren't falling off and as a driver. So it's just, I find if I break my concentration with just bullshit conversation, I get sidetracked a lot. Yeah. So for me, it's just paying attention a lot throughout the night, making sure we're, you know, keeping up with the racetrack. And like I said, making sure that things on the car and our team are where they need to be for the night and the feature. So a lot of work, but that's just, you know, I'm not one of these kids that was one of these kids that sits there on my phone. I look at these kids and they're on phone or scrolling through Facebook or whatever. And I don't know if that's a luxury or something for them. You know, there's not a lot of work. A lot of guys are doing the work for them, and it's just very passive time. And then they hop in the race car and rip. And I don't know if a lot of them would do it if they had to, you know, really grind for it. But that's kind of how I've been structured since I left to go on the road. Mm-hmm. So at times, you know, and right now we're looking for some help to take some of that workload off me, but finding the right people is key. Yeah. So we're just not looking for anybody. We're looking for the right people that can come and help our team grow and get to where we want to go.
What's it take to be that right person, you think?
Dedication, you know, the right work ethic, the right IQ, I guess. Some guys are really good at, you know, just like drivers, there's naturally talented crew chiefs too that have an eye for the sport and watching a race car and working with a driver. And so really just looking for the right guy. I've been around long enough. You get the wrong guys involved, it could take you backwards and spend a lot of time with the wrong people, and it hurts your program, and a lot of inner conflict happens. So I'm kind of over all that, and you know, I'll roll with just me and one guy, you know, if I have to, until we can find the right people. And we're close. We have good help right now with people that want to be here. And so it's just putting more pieces of the puzzle together going forward.
Yeah. You grew up around here, but you've made the move to Oklahoma, and that's where you now call home, quote unquote. What was the move and reason behind that?
Sprint car racing.
Yeah.
At the time, the Midwest, where I'm at now, was the hotbed for ASCS racing. Mm-hmm. So that's where we found ourselves. It was very central to all the racing we were doing. You know, as you can imagine, driving from Washington to anywhere in the Midwest is a long drive. Yeah, so it's just like, okay, well, this isn't working out. So I started spending more time out there than I was here, and then ended up just really liking the Midwest. And just
it's a beautiful area.
Yeah, a lot more racing you have access to out here or out there. So that's where we ended up, and, you know, just started a family, and we live out there now, and I wouldn't change it. I love where I come from here, and I know where I come from and who I am. I'll never let that go or forget about that, but there's not a whole lot I enjoy about Washington State anymore. I like to come out here, and you don't see me really too many other places when I come out west other than Skagit Speedway right here. I don't venture out much, and it's one of the few things I still enjoy about the Northwest is coming here to Skagit Speedway and, you know, racing here and then getting back out of there. I love the Midwest now. I think I turned into a Midwesterner. Like to come out and see the mountains and the speedway and a few things I enjoy, but definitely enjoy when I get back out of here and get to the open plains of the Midwest. That's something I really enjoy about that now, too.
See, so I've got some family back in the Midwest. I've done those drives. You like those open plains?
You get used to it. When I come out here, I feel very trapped. Like, I feel very, like, enclosed. There's a shit ton of traffic out here.
Oh, that's true.
if you're not careful, you sit in hours of that. Oh, so goodness. I don't enjoy that.
Okay.
But it's not all that bad. The weather's been great. Speedway's been great. Mm-hmm. You guys and the staff up here is good. And there are a lot of things I still do enjoy, but just could never see myself living here again. But definitely coming back with what Kevin and staff are doing here, coming back a lot and enjoying the Speedway and some of the things I enjoy about the Northwest for sure.
You mentioned how many more tracks there are in the Midwest. I mean, you look at Washington, it's really Skagit, Grays Harbor. You go into Oregon, there's a couple more, and really have to go down to California, where it feels like in the Midwest, it's a dime a dozen. You can pretty much find a track within a rock's throw of where. What is the racing kind of compare like here in Washington versus the Midwest?
It's not very comparable. I mean, they're kind of two different areas of the country and styles and atmospheres. The racing out there this time of the year, if you're not careful where you're going, there's a lot of rubber.
Oh, really?
Rubber down racing, dry slick racetracks. And it's just good tracks out there. It seemed to be a dime a dozen. So what is comparable is not a lot. You guys don't have a lot here in the Northwest.
Yeah.
You know, just Skagit and Elma basically. But what you do have here in Skagit is quality. So you have not a lot, but you have very, very quality racetrack. Is out there, I feel like we have a lot, but the quality lacks.
Interesting.
So don't get me wrong, there are some beautiful racetracks and facilities out there, but there's also a lot of racetracks where you scratch your head and, you know, you kind of wonder what we're doing here as a sprint car team, at least.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of them within a rock's throw, like you said, but not very many I'd probably go to. And then, like, it's so enjoyable for me coming back home here because what Kevin and his entire staff have done here is created a, and, you know, improved what was already a great place to race. Improve the facility, the track, the money. It just seems like they're keeping up with the times. And, yeah. and when you can find a speedway and a staff that does that, as a sprint car team like we have, you want to be able to come support that, and you feel justified, you know, with your team. Like we, our team gets a lot of money spent on it, so you want to go to places where you, you feel appreciated and where they're also putting money into their facility and races and give us an opportunity to come race for some good money. So that's why you find us out here.
We talked kind of about your 250 days at Deming. I just want to bring that back up because it's so interesting. You mentioned, you know, there's a lot of kids that don't. I was born in 02, so I'll date myself. I really never saw 250s at Deming Speedway. I've known them a lot of 600s. I've heard of the 250 class. But what was a 250 class like?
Probably not a whole lot different than the 600s. I mean, car size-wise, they were comparable. They weren't, you know, they were probably close to the same size as a 600.
Okay.
The wheelbase and stuff was just a little bit different, but it was a 250 engine instead of a 600. So like a 250 cc, like a kind of like a motorcycle engine. They sounded a lot different. They smoked a lot. They were loud.
Really?
We shifted. Yeah. Okay. I remember shifting four times a lap back then.
Holy wait, shifting four times a lap.
Yeah. So if I can remember right, we would go down the straightaway and upshift and downshift each end. So we would downshift getting into the corners and catch that gear and accelerate off the corner and then grab a gear and lengthen out the straightaway with more mile per hour and then downshift back into the other end. So it ended up being four times a lap. So during the 250s races, you'd hear a lot of change in pitch of the sound in the engines, but that's just the way they raced. And
so they don't, they, that's not a 600 race at all.
No, not at all.
You maybe shift on a start and you go.
Yeah.
So, all right.
It was different, but that's what we had back then, and that's what was popular. So I can remember Clay Cup, we had like 50, maybe almost 60 cars at that time. So I don't know. From what I remember back then, it was there was a lot of them, and it was kind of almost seemed like one of the – it was probably the premier class there next to the 1200s. The 1200s were, have always been around, but it's kind of similar to how the 1200s and 600s are now.
Did you ever turn any time in a 600 or 1200 at all?
No.
No?
I mean, I randomly drove a 600 here and there, but not a lot at all. Okay. Never a 1200. It was, we went to Deming Speedway, kind of using it, I think, as a feeder to get to Skagit. And when I got old enough, we were at Deming for a couple of years and we had won the Clay Cup. And then I was old enough to get into a sprint car here. So that's what we did.
Okay. What was that like going from Snohomish all the way up to, I mean, that's not a short drive.
Yeah, no, I don't remember much from then. I mean, I remember, I mean, I wasn't even old enough to drive, really, when we were going to Deming. So it would be hopping in the truck with my mom and dad and our dually and tag trailer and my dad driving us up there and racing and driving home. So it was no big deal. I think at that time, you know, traffic wasn't as bad. So we would leave Friday, you know, morning and lunchtime or so and go up to Deming and race and come back home. So I do know I was one of the few from down south that would come up this way and race. I wasn't really a part of the dirt track scene really ever. Until we went to Deming and then up to Skagit. You know, it seems like a lot of the racers are up here. A lot of them are from north, up north here in this area. So we were kind of secluded a little bit being from down south. But
you're here for the entire month of July. Where do you see your schedule going? Do you see you want to go back with ASCS, or do you think you're going to kind of keep going on this kind of build your own type schedule?
I don't know. ASCS probably isn't off the table, but also building our own schedule isn't off the table either. I think we'll just kind of see where it goes and what we want to do. I think at some point we need to get together as a team and figure out what direction we need to go. But we got to a point this year where we figured we're going to go make our own schedule and we'll gather some, you know, info and data off kind of how our year goes and how the 410s go and, you know, what goes on with the 360. And we'll just figure out collectively what we want to do. I think we can be set up to do either. For me, it kind of depends on the direction ASCS goes and what their schedule looks like and what their pay is like and see where 410 racing is going. Obviously, it's headed in an awesome direction, and there's a lot of money there. So if we can make sense out of that too, that's on the table as well. For us, I just think that nothing is off the table. Whatever's going to fit right for me and our team and the people we find and what we're able to build, if we can get built to do something great, then we'll do that. And if ASCS comes comes around and offers a really strong schedule with some great races and some good pay, then that's an opportunity too. But for now, We'll just take some time and pick and choose and run at the tracks we want to run at for the pay we want to run at, and we'll see, you know, where it goes from there.
So you could say, well, I guess you said nothing off table. Maybe we'll do some more 410 races.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That 410 race we ran here the other night was kind of the first introduction for our team into 410 racing. So, yeah. And it went well. So, we'll plan some more of those. And yeah, like I said, we'll just kind of see where that goes. And it takes a lot, you know, because we wouldn't be 410 racing just at a local level, right? Like, if we're going to do it, we're going to be racing a lot at some national events. So if we can build to get to that, then that's an option too. But it takes good help and race engines, and a lot goes into that. So if that's something we decide to do, I know our partners will probably be for it. It's a conversation we'd have to have. But we're set up right now. We have 360s and we have one 410. And so we can bounce around and keep our schedule open and just kind of see where it goes. But, you know, I have to thank John Claiborne with Oklahoma Chiller. Honestly, without him, the flexibility we have right now wouldn't be possible. So, you know, I said a lot about our partners and sponsors, and he's the main one that's making it all possible. So, without him, none of this is probably happening. Him and Josh Stagg and Bryant Paver, and there's a group of guys there, Troy, and a big group that's helped us build the team to where we're at now, to even have the idea of having flexible options and being able to look at schedules and series and things and figure out what we want to do.
How did that partnership with Oklahoma Chillers and them kind of fall together?
A phone call from them to me, which is great. They were looking, some things kind of fell apart on their end with what they had going on. And that was around the same time things fell apart with me in 2C racing. I came back to my own team, and then we got hooked up there, and it's been good ever since.
We talked about the crew chiefing and, you know, all that technical aspect, but, I mean, when owning your own race team, you kind of have to find some of your own sponsors too, right, a little bit?
Yeah, so that's been the grind for me ever since I left was, you know, it started with a family-owned team with me and my parents. It was my parents, and they were funding it. We didn't have a lot of help, and they gave me everything they could, and that was it, you know, from where it was going to go from there was where it was going to go. And they've helped me all along the way. But it's the whole time it's been a struggle to find help to do this. Mm-hmm. But that's been the grind for me is trying to find ways to keep the team going and find people that are, you know, willing to get involved with us to keep us going. Cause without that, I would have been home a long time ago. Yeah. But through all the years and work, I've found a way to keep it going and networking and just staying racing and getting results has led me from one opportunity to the next. And I'm a big believer. Like, I truly believe if you set your mind and, you know, on something and you're going to push that, you can do it, but you just got to work at it and you can't be lazy, you know, and really there is no plan B, right? So for me, I left and like a lot of guys I watch leave, and then they give up and they come home and then that's it. I just never been one of those guys. You know, I've freaking slept in some interesting places and not had a roof over my head for a long time. And, just one opportunity to next. And, it's led us to the opportunity we're in now. And I feel like it's been my best one yet with the people we have and the team we have built.
Interesting. You, what was the least favorable place that you've slept in?
Well, I don't know, probably the backseat of a pickup or something like that out in the middle of nowhere in a snowstorm, probably by myself. I can remember. A lot of lonely times, like I said, you go through help and guys leave you and then you're stuck there on your own and wondering why you're doing it. And for me, it was just keep your mind on the goal, and that's what's always carried me through. And I've had some good help and some good mentors along the way and some of our partners and business owners that have helped me keep a good head about it and how to build and get through things like that. So it's been a lot. Been through a lot of crazy times over the years traveling and being in a sport like this. The things you see and people you meet and things you go through has been a wild experience. But I know we have a lot of that left, so I'm here for it, and we're building and working and just enjoying it.
And I guess that would even make you those wins even more sweeter, knowing what you've done to work through to get to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. When the wins come, they're special no matter where they come. And it seems like today, everybody's really close and these kids are hungry to win, and they come and they stand on the gas. And as you get older, that doesn't get any easier. You have to work harder at keeping that pace and that mentality. But I do feel like getting older, you have things you don't have when you're young. If you can find a way to stay young in certain areas of your driving style, but also use the time you've spent in the sport to be smart and navigate your way, I think that definitely helps too. So I feel like I'm just at an age to where I can still be young enough to have really, really good pace to match these young guys, but also wise enough, been around long enough to use the thinking side of it and the finesse side too to still get results.
What do you mean by that when you kind of say stay young in your driving style?
Well, you watch it, young guys don't know what the hell's going on. They don't understand life yet and what's going on. And it's almost like a superpower as a race car driver, as much of a hindrance as it can be, tearing shit up and things like that. I mean, you just know, a lot of them know one speed. They have no fear. And it's just pedal to the floor. And as hard as they can run those things seems to be the style now. You know, I can remember those days. There was a time where I didn't even think about running the bottom. It took too much finesse, and I didn't know how to do it when you just hammered the top. So being young, that's what I mean, is just you have kind of one gear and one pace. You have a lot more pace, it seems like, and you're very aggressive, and you haven't been around the sport long enough yet and seen things and really learned what the grind's all about to slow you down. So as you get older, you go through it all, and like I said, you see a lot of guys think they want to do it, and they do it. Sport wears them down, they get tired, and they quit. Well, the guys that stick this shit out for a long period of time, they got dogs inside of them. They keep them coming back. And I think the ones that you do see stick around for that long, there's just a different, you know, you learn things over the years. And as you get older, you know, you change, and your driving style is probably going to change a little bit. But if you can find a way, I guess what you're asking, to keep certain styles, you know, because it seems like when guys get old, they slow down, and they can only win in certain situations when it's slick or slow or finesse. And if you can use that as you get older, you can still, you know, use those in those situations to win when it's like that. You have the experience to do that. But if you can find a way mentally and with a workout regimen or whatever it is to keep yourself young to where you can still run that pace, you know, to where you can still be right sides above it or four in the fluff, or, you know, when you need to bang the boards and be very aggressive, you can still do it. Because you see a lot of older guys or guys that get later in their career that won't do it. They'll peel off and run the bottom, and they may just not win that night. But if you can find a way and stay sharp enough, I think as you get older, to stay sharp enough to do that, to do those things, to be able to be good when the track's one way and also the other, that's the key. That's the key for me right now, at least. I know I'm getting good at like more finesse and more thinking, and that's helped me a lot, I think. And but staying to where I'm still able to bang the boards and run a pace that, you know, maybe some of these young guys can't is the goal still.
So using that young experience versus your older and wiser and kind of blending that together. You mentioned working out. What's a week like, look kind of like for you? I mean, I guess you've had a little bit more time now than maybe you do normally when you're on the road with ASCS, but when you're doing this full time, what's a week look like for you? How do you take care of yourself too?
It's hard, especially when you get out of your, like for me, I'm out, away from home, so I'm out of my normal routine. I don't have access really to, you know, my wife cooks me good home meals and stuff while I'm home, and we try to watch our diet. So when you get away from that, it's tough. But when you're away, it's just honestly, when I'm here, I don't really, you know, I could, I guess, go to the gym or something, but I'm not going to do that. So.
It's tough when gym memberships are so through the roof. Yeah,
I mean, I'm just probably not going to do it. You know, I would when I was home. I have a home gym at home in my shop, so get used to that. And but when I'm out on the road, you know, exercise, whether try to be get out and golf or stay active, try to watch what you eat. Fast food is easy, right? When you're when you're away and on the road, so try to stay away as much fast food eating as you can, even though it happens. And when I've been here, it's been lucky. We're staying at a good shop, and we've had some home-cooked meals for us. So trying to watch what you eat somewhat and still eat good and not just a bunch of junk. And I get up every morning still and stretch and make sure I do some form of activity. A lot of body weight activities, right? Workouts. So just calisthenics, I guess, whether it be push-ups or, it sounds funny, but like air squats and some things, some stretching, right?
Yeah, just but it still makes a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Especially as you get older too. Stretching, I have found, becomes a lot more useful. So
I'm not good at stretching.
Yeah. Well, you'll get good at it when you get older, trust me.
Great. All right.
Otherwise, you'd just be walking around gimped up all day. So you'll find a way to adapt. But yeah, that's what it looks like. Just trying to watch diet somewhat and, you know, stretching and staying active and you know, keeping you sharp, and really mentally, you got to find a way to stay sharp. That's what's really important too.
You had mentioned some mentors. Who's been your biggest mentor? Who just helped you along this way?
I can't say I really ever had like one mentor, right? It's been like, yeah, this guy has been here and mentored me. For me, it's just been a lot of like watching guys I look up to and not really asking questions, but just watch and taking things from them. That's more so what it's been throughout the years. It's just paying attention to the guys that are good at it. And, you know, I have been lucky enough to be around some very successful guys, and you listen to their philosophies and mentalities and see how they do things, and, mm-hmm, you know, pick things up you want and leave things you don't. And that's kind of how I've navigated, you know, when I'm around mentorish type people or watching very successful people in the sport, more so just observing. Like I said, I can't say I was never a kid that actually just like had a mentor growing up in sprint car racing that was like, hey, here's a badass who's going to teach you the ropes of this. I've always kind of had to learn that on my own. So
who were some of those people then that you kind of watched? I know there's so many good sprint car drivers, but
I don't want to name any because I feel like if I name one, I'll leave one out. Yeah, but there's been a group. And then like now, especially, one of our main helpers and sponsors, John Claiborne, he's a great guy. He's one of the best guys I've ever been hooked up with. He's a good human, and he does a lot for our race team, and, have great conversations with him. And, like I said, without him, we wouldn't be doing this at the caliber we are right now.
Well, we'll wrap it up with this. What advice would you offer to anyone who's younger and kind of making their way and maybe wants to go out on the road a little bit?
Go to college. I don't know, honestly. That's such an open question. It is, you could say so many things. I know for me, my experience, you got to have desire. It's a tough sport. You spend a lot of time away, and you definitely have to want it. You know, you can't just say you want it. You got to want it. You got to have that desire that drives you through a lot of the tough times. And so for me, that's what it's always been about, is coming back to why I do this. And it's kept me around for this long. So I don't really have these magical words of wisdom for these young kids. But I think if you want it bad enough, you can make it happen.
Yeah. Well, Seth, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We look forward to seeing you. It's been really good having you at Skagit Speedway, but seeing you for the Fred Brownfield 3-6 Nationals presented by Bob's Burger and Brew. So thank you. We appreciate your time.
Thanks.
Well, we thank Seth so much for his time joining us here on the Gas Eric List with you once again. I know Blake Anderson this weekend. He is off at Eldora Speedway for the Kings Royal. Skagit Speedway also is off this weekend due to the Clay Cup Nationals up at Deming Speedway. So if you're looking for some phenomenal micro sprint car racing action this weekend, please, please, please go check out Deming Speedway. $10,000 to win on Saturday night for the Premier 600 class, where they'll have a boatload of cars. When I say boatload, it will be a boatload of cars. Well over 100 total cars in the pit area, and should be, would estimate, probably into the 40s, 50s in the 600 open division. But we'll be racing once again July 25th and 26th here at Skagit Speedway for the Fred Brownfield 360 National presented by Bob's Burger and Brew, and being joined as well by the Hornets for the Hornet National presented by K-Pro Auto. That will be Friday, July 25th, and Saturday, July 26th here at Skagit Speedway. $26,000 to win for the 360 Sprint Car Division, $1,250 to win for the Hornet Division. Also joining us will be the Sprint Car Challenge Tour. Their Speed Week to work their way up here kicks off tomorrow, Friday, July 18th at Silver Dollar Speedway, then July 19th at Placerville, the 21st at Douglas County, 22nd at Coos Bay, 23rd Cottage Grove, 25 and 26 here at Skagit Speedway. And then that Speed Week tour will conclude at Grays Harbor on Sunday, July 27th. But if you're not making it down for the Speed Week, make sure you come and find us Thursday night. That will be the Thursday before the 360 Nationals at the Bob's Burger and Brew right off Cook Road here in Burlington for the 360 Nationals kickoff party. That will take place from 5 to 7 p.m. Come have some great food inside the Bob's Burger and Brew. Enter to win some raffle prizes and all that good stuff. And plus, even before that, we've got another party for you. July 22nd, that Tuesday, at Brewcade in Stanwood, the kickoff party for the Hornet Nationals. Prizes 1v1 Mario Kart bracket, 210 Brewing Company. So come hang out, play some pinball, a really, really cool type arcade brewery style at Brewcade. They've got a whole bunch of retro pinball machines. That'll be from 5 to 8 p.m. once again, Brewcade in Stanwood, July 22nd. For the Hornet Nationals, that will be a good time. Come see the Hornets. We'll have some Hornets out there, play some Mario Kart, have some adult beverages, and enjoy. But again, no racing here at Sketch Speedway this weekend. Head on up to Deming Speedway for the Clay Cup Nationals. You can find and follow all that's going on at Sketch Speedway on our social medias. That's Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, at Skagit Speedway, and you can buy your tickets online at skagitspeedway.com. Gates open at 5. Racing will start at 7. For Eric List, thanks for joining me on this week's edition of the On the Gas podcast, presented by Skagit Speedway.